Today on Birdland BS, it's episode 51. The Caps dominoes are starting to fall. Ravens rookies settling in. How do the Orioles get fans back out? What Baltimore team is currently in first? All this and more. Stay tuned. You thought we'd start the show off like that? Birdland BS. Check it out. What is up, Birdland BSers? Facebook Live, YouTube Live, all of you out there in the media world, welcome.
Social media world,
welcome. It's episode 51. Scott, it's been a pretty fun and sports-filled week for the two of us, huh?
It has been. It's been an exciting week. I've enjoyed it, that's for sure.
We got a lot to go over in this show, including some personal experiences, some first personal experiences for us that we're excited to share with you guys. Let's get into, first and foremost, the Capitals. And seems to be the chips are starting to fall with them. We kind of talked last week about the Trot situation, and wasn't long after the podcast that Barry Trotz made it official with the New York Islanders, signing a 5-year, $20 million deal, gives an average annual salary of $4 million. To me,
well deserved. I mean,
well deserved, but at $4 million. Really? The Caps couldn't pony that up and pay your Stanley Cup head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing there. That was a horrendous move on their part for him to walk away at $4 million. It's, you know, he just won a Stanley Cup, and right. He's taken the team to the playoffs how many times? The guy's proven himself. Good for the Islanders, and for all intents and purposes, I hope in the next 2 years they go to the Stanley Cup, and if not go there, at least, you know, get in the playoffs, because it'll just prove his worth.
Yeah, I mean, I wish nothing but Barry Trotz, nothing but success up there in New York. It's a shame, you know. I mean, this Washington team, when you looked at them on paper, had been much better in years past with other coaches leading the way. Yeah, it took Barry Trotz a few years to get the job done, but ultimately, he wins the Stanley Cup for the first time in franchise history, and now he's gone. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Like I said last week, especially with the amount of money that they throw at these players, you mean to tell me you couldn't shell up another $2 million on top of what you were already paying the coach to keep your, you know, consistency, to keep your locker room happy, that kind of thing? That makes me think that there's more to the story. There's more going on behind the scenes, whether it was something personal between Leonsis and Trotz, or, you know, McPherson and Trotz, the GM. I don't know. I'm not privy to that kind of information. And there hasn't been many rumors going around about it, you know, for anything for you to research or look into. It was all just about financials. And to me, to be that, you know, $2 million off seems kind of crappy on
Caps. I mean, it's ridiculous. We could go on about this, the ridiculousness of this, forever.
Right.
But we do have to move on from Barry Trotz at some point. And now may be a good time. We'll see what happens. But, you know, they also had some big news coming out of the Caps camp in trading Brooks Orpik and Grubauer. Grubauer said he wanted to go be a starter. Well, he's going to be a starter most likely for the Colorado Avalanche. We got their second round draft pick, the number 47 overall. Then you have, what does that mean for Carlson and Wilson? Well, Carlson says, I'll sign.
Yeah, that was answered pretty quickly with John Carlson signing an 8-year deal worth an average of $8 million per season. Big signing. I mean, I kind of knew that the Grubauer thing was coming. You know, I saw that as, one, obviously, like he said, Grubauer wants to get a starting role somewhere, but two, more of a salary dump to be able to sign some of your bigger free agents. Once you got rid of Orpik and you got rid of Grubauer, that freed up a total of about $21 million for the Caps underneath the salary cap. So it allowed them to be able to sign Carlson. The next guy I'm hoping on their wish is Tom Wilson. You know, another big, hard-hitting defenseman at 24 years old, super young.
You got to sign the Bash brother. You got to.
We've talked about him in the past couple of weeks, how important he is to this team and getting him back into the locker. I mean, everything that I've heard in interviews with him is he wants to stay. So it sounds like the puck is in the Caps court.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. They have to make an offer. If they don't make an offer, if they haven't already made an offer, I question where the mindset of this team is. Are they now going to say, you know, all right, we won our cup. All right. You know, is that the mindset at that point? The Carlson signing gives me hope to say no.
Right.
But you have to sign Wilson. I would have expected, honestly, Wilson signing before Carlson because he's a little bit younger and he is the heart and soul of your defense.
Right.
You know, he is a guy who is physical. He is not afraid to get it. And, you know, get into it and put a guy up against the wall. And then he comes out and, you know, fights a guy after he's coming out of the penalty box, too. That kind of helps.
Yeah, he's definitely got that kind of a mentality. But speaking of off-season moves, the Ravens, their off-season moves seem to be kind of settling in both on and off the field. I don't know if you're a follower of Lamar Jackson on Twitter and all the social networkings and Snapchat and whatnot. He seems to be settling in with the team and with the city pretty nicely.
He is. He actually did an interview with The Lounge, which they do a podcast that he comes on. They do it with a lot of the Ravens. I actually think it might actually be sponsored by the Ravens. Don't quote me on that.
No, it's through BaltimoreRavens.com. It's Ryan Mink and Garrett Downing, two guys that run the Ravens website that host the podcast.
All right. So then, I mean, he's on there with them and talking about, you know, how he's settling in the city. You know, he starts getting recognized and, you know, people are wanting autographs and he said, you know, people are following him home. Yeah. It's not exactly a good thing, but I mean, it means he's settling in to an area and settling into a rhythm.
He almost seems kind of to me like he doesn't really enjoy the spotlight. Like he'd rather not have all the distractions of the fans. You know, some people feed into that stuff. You know, some people are showboats and that kind of thing, and they feed into that attention.
You wouldn't pinpoint that from the draft. The way he responded at the draft, yeah. I mean, you would have never have pinpointed that.
Right, right. No, that's very true.
You know, the flashy suit, you know, the whole interview with Deion Sanders.
Right.
It didn't seem that way, but I definitely agree. He definitely seems to be this laid back, and it seems his attitude from the interview that he did with them, as well as some others, it seems like he's got this laid back mentality. I hate to say it, but it's Joe Cool-esque.
A little more vocal, a little bit more animated. He definitely has a passion about himself. He definitely has a confidence in himself. He's good and he knows he's good. I just think that the media attention and all the fan attention and all that stuff, I don't know if it's just too much for him, if he just doesn't enjoy it, you know, that type of thing. But he seems
not be
to
used
kinda,
to it either.
I don't know. I mean, from the interview that you're talking about, he was telling stories about things that happened to him in high school and, you know, what his rookie year or his first year's freshman year at Louisville and things. I mean, this guy was thrown into the spotlight at a pretty young age.
Yeah, pretty young, pretty quick. So, but yeah, no, you mentioned, you know, that all these interviews that he's done. And in that interview, he actually made the statement, he's never been big on sliding. Well, guess what, Lamar? You better freaking get used to it. And if RG3's not in his ear after saying that on a podcast, he better be.
I can tell you one thing. He better not take sliding lessons from Flacco.
Yeah, no.
Flacco has to be one of the worst sliders I've ever seen in football. And this is a guy that played baseball growing up. Like, he's got brothers that, you know, one of the Flacco brothers, I think it was Mike Flacco, played in the Orioles minor league system at one point. You would think this guy could just do a basic fundamental slide, but Lord, I don't know how many times he's broken and bent up his knee brace since his knee's been, you know.
Yeah, he slides up. And that brace comes sliding around. You know, it looks like his kneecap's sitting sideways because of just how the brace is.
Yeah. It's interesting, but another rookie that seems to be doing pretty well and starting to make a name for himself with the media is Hayden Hurst. Yeah, obviously the Ravens' first round draft pick. Guy that I'm excited to see get out on the field. A guy that it's crucial to Joe Flacco's success is having a pass catching tight end. And whether that means Flacco's only around for this year or Flacco's around for the next 2 years, he's going to be crucial in how well Flacco runs this offense.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. And he's an overall athlete. People, a lot of people in Baltimore that I've kind of talked to about this actually have no idea on this piece, but he actually grew up also playing baseball. This guy can throw a low 90s fastball. That's impressive.
Yeah, that is pretty impressive.
And he was drafted in the 17th round by the Pirates, and they offered him a $400,000 signing bonus that convinced him to forego college and go into Pittsburgh's rookie league team.
Right.
And he flamed out, you know, unfortunately, but fortunately for the Ravens, he's looking pretty good, and he's looking like an overall athlete. Everything, yeah. I keep hearing, you know, the drops are minimal. He's solid. He's got the speed. Everything is there, and he just seems to be putting it all together.
Yeah, James brings up another good point about Flacco and the athleticism that runs in Flacco's family is that Flacco's brother just transferred to Towson to be the starting quarterback in Towson. And, yeah, I saw that in the headlines the other day. So be interesting to see two Flacco brothers here in here in Baltimore playing football. So have you ever gone to a Towson football game? It's a lot of fun.
I have not. I've not been to a Towson football game. I have heard that, though. I've heard that it's a great atmosphere to be at.
I was there for a few of the games when Terrence West was, I mean, just running people over. And he really was on another level in that league. You know, 1AA football. He was a man amongst boys in that league. And speaking of Terrence West, good on him. Signed a deal with the New Orleans Saints the other day. So he's officially out of the Ravens fold.
Yeah.
Moving forward, but glad to see him land on his feet somewhere. I don't know how they plan on using him, considering, you know, they've got Ingram and they've got Kamara, you know, both kind of one and two there.
Unless they know something about Ingram that they're not telling everybody.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I can think of.
Either that or just having him as like a change of pace type thing, but we shall see.
Speaking of change of pace, brings us to our next topic.
Yeah.
Which was a great experience for both of us.
Absolutely.
I'll let you tell the story behind how we got to this point.
So we were approached by a friend of ours. And there was an opportunity for us to gain media access for a local Baltimore football team, that being the Baltimore Brigade. For those out there who don't know who the Brigade are, they're our arena football league team. They've been here 2 years now. This is their second year. Last year, didn't do too hot. They were 4-10 during the regular season. But this year, they're in first place. After the loss Saturday, we went and watched them. First home loss of the season. So I don't know if that's a
not our fault.
Not our fault. Not our fault. Not our fault. Being there, they're 7-3 on the year. They've got one more regular season game to go.
I think it's two more. I think they got Philly, and then I think they take on the Valor one more time in Washington. I think there's
really
two more games left. Okay. Yeah,
I knew they had at least the one more in Philly. Battling it out for playoff season. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about the league. For those out there that don't really know much about Arena League football, very, very fast pace, very high scoring. I mentioned this on the Facebook Live video while we were there. It's defense is kind of at a premium.
Yeah, it is.
Any kind of defensive stop or any kind of turnover or anything like that is crucial in this game. It's not that it's not crucial in the NFL and college, but it's on another level here. I mean, you basically are scoring touchdowns on every single drive in this league.
Defense wins championships in AFL, period.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make a couple stops a game, chances are you're going to win that game. The football field's only 50 yards long. So, I mean, regardless of where you are on the field, you're in touchdown striking distance in reality. I mean, these guys have no problem chucking the ball 45, 50 yards downfield in the corner of the end zone. We saw that multiple times
yeah.
in this game, a couple of which guy that you were a pretty big fan of, the wide receiver Tompkins.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, Collins.
Yeah, Tompkins was off the hook. So just to give you guys a little bit of background on some of these players, you know, some of the players are top guys in the AFL, but ironically, the receiving core for the Brigade, the top guy is Tompkins, and he's sixth in the league.
Yeah.
Mind you, there's only four teams in the league.
Right, exactly.
So it's, you know, he's the sixth guy, number six guy in the league, which isn't bad because most teams are boasting three, four, five receivers that they're throwing out there a game. And he's number six receiver. He's, you know, the main man, main return man for the Brigade as well. But he definitely came out. They came out swinging, and they threw an opening touchdown to him right over the middle, and he went 41 yards with it.
Yeah. It, like I said, I mean, at any given time, it doesn't matter if you're 45 yards out, if you're 5 yards out, you're within touchdown striking distance. And I really, we got towards the end of the game, and we were in like the latter parts of the third quarter, getting ready to go into the fourth quarter, and the Brigade were down three touchdowns. And I thought, well, there's no way.
Yeah, no.
This game's out of hand. The clock continuously runs unless there's a timeout, unless there's
an injury.
Or after a touchdown, after a score, the time does stop there. But it's not on every down. And I misjudged it. I really thought that there was no way the Brigade would come back. They did make a valiant effort there at the end with a couple of scores and a beautiful, probably one of the best onside kicks I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. This guy, I mean, you talk about perfection. They lined up just like they would in the NFL, and this guy kicked it 15 yards on a bounce to the corner of the end zone, like where the field and the end zone line met up. And guy recovered the ball. It was beautifully done. But just to give you a little bit of background, so their quarterback, Randy Hippert, he had kind of an up and down game for me. I mean, he had obviously some big plays, but he seemed to struggle once he got within the 10-yard line. I don't even know if they call it like the red zone in the Arena Football League. You know, we're still learning.
What's the red zone, half the field?
Yeah, like I really don't know what they classify, but it seemed like once they got inside the 10-yard line, he really struggled with completing some passes and finding his wide receivers open. But when he had players who had room to work, you know, down the field, the guy was beast.
Oh yeah, he definitely was. He could hit the open guy, you know, long distance pretty well. You know, even he had one short distance touchdown that actually got they said it wasn't a touchdown. I thought it looked like a touchdown. They reviewed it. They came back and said there, you know, basically wasn't enough evidence to overturn it.
Talking about the one that bounced off the wall a little bit?
No. I'm talking about the one on the end zone that was closest to us, where the guy hits it and then hits the wall. But I guess they thought the wall was at, like, the half a yard line or something
right.
like that.
Right.
He's in the end zone, but his body is facing out of the end zone. So I don't know if they had a better angle or not.
It's hard to see from where we were.
Yeah, we were up in the media booth. But yeah, I mean, it was really great. He had the one that was, like you said, almost touchdown. It literally hit the guy in the hands. The receiver bobbled it one time and it hits off the wall. And, you know, little known fact for anybody that hasn't seen it in the AFL, if the ball hits a wall, it's dead.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, basically the wall is out of bounds. Right. Now, if a guy hits the wall on his own, he's still in play. He's still good.
Right.
He has to be hit into the wall. And that's the equivalency of, you know, a guy being tackled, you know, and being, you know, dropped or stopped
right.
at that point. But there's a lot of interesting things that I thought were honestly really cool with the AFL that the NFL could almost take something from.
Yeah.
The coaches. So the coaches are actually on the field behind the play.
Yeah.
So they're lining up behind the line of scrimmage. They're, you know, sending out signals to their defense. They're sending out calls to their offense. I'm pretty sure I actually looked it up. I couldn't find anything on it. But the way that the what seemed to be the offensive coordinator was running things for the Brigade, he was appeared to be talking into the mic all the way up until the play.
Right.
You know, calling it right then and there. And I think that's why it's such a high scoring game, because he's able to say, all right, you got this coverage. Go. You're going for this shot right here.
Right.
Go. And I thought it was really interesting just how much communication there was. I mean, you were sitting there saying the one guy is yelling on defense and making hand signals and, yeah, you know.
It was really crazy to see. I mean, now, granted, the coaches don't get onto the field until they get into that quote-unquote red zone, like once they're inside the 10. But, I mean, you're seeing the coaches out there, like you said, doing hand signals and yelling things right up until the play is until the ball is hiked. But I mean, it's just, it was such a cool experience. We, you know, for us, we got a chance to meet Omar Smith, which is the head coach for the Baltimore Brigade, also a Arena League Football Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
We got to meet some of the players. I imagine Omar was a nice guy, but he wasn't too happy after this game. How you doing, Omar?
Set a franchise record for points last week, and then you come in, and what happened?
We weren't mentally prepared for a physical ball game. Too many mental mistakes. Starts with me. I got to get it corrected. We got a tough road game next week.
You got a half-game lead on the division right now, and you got to play Philly next week. And Philly's kind of nipping at your heels, along with Albany, you know, for titles or for first place. So you got to be ready for them.
We gotta go try to win a win a ball game. Regardless what the standings are, we gotta get better and play our type of football next week. The standings at this point don't matter. Anybody can win it. We have to get better. We gotta look ourselves in the mirror and let the humble pie sit in a little bit.
I saw Collins come off about 4:50 left in the game. Do we have any injury update? He seemed to be limping off.
No, I haven't visited with the medical staff yet. As soon as I'm done here, that's what I'm going to do.
All right. He also had a big game. What is his, you know, his impact in this game? Obviously, you know, it's still a loss. But what kind of upbeat, you know, having a guy like Collins on your team, you know, what does it do for the team mentality?
Well, he's a playmaker. But, you know, we have talent. But just because you have talent, you got to do the little things. You turn the ball over. So when you turn the ball over, that negates the special plays and things of that nature. So, he's a good player. We got a good group of guys. We just need to regroup and refocus.
Okay. And there's Coach Omar Smith. And he was right on. I mean, Collins made some hell of a plays. Tompkins made hell of a plays. But too many turnovers, too many critical mistakes down close in the end zone. Got to clean it up going into next week in Philly if they really want to lock in a good playoff seed and be the number one seed going in.
Yeah, I mean, you said it afterwards. I mean, almost immediately after he walked out of the room, he was pissed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wish we had video for you guys, because seeing his face and his facial expressions, we're the media, so I'm sure he's really not wanting to talk to us after the game. But at the same time, his facial expressions when we asked the questions were just, you know, disgust. That was kind of, and he owned up to it. He, like you said, he owned up to it and said, there's some things I got to fix. That's my fault. I got to get it fixed.
He owned it. And that's good to see a coach, you know, step up and take pride, you know, and don't throw anybody under the bus. It starts with you and it ends with you as a head coach. And, you know, he took that on as the head coach. And I look, but it, regardless, win or lose, there were, 800 people down there watching this game? Get down there and watch it. For $14, it's super entertaining football. And these guys, they're not just your average Joes out there playing football. I mean, these are guys that all went to Division I football colleges and couldn't make it onto an NFL roster somewhere. But that doesn't mean that these guys are lacking in talent at all. I mean, these guys are really good athletes, and it's a super fun game to watch. And for those that have families, you've got kids out there, it's really, really fun family experience. They do a lot to get the crowd involved and to get the kids involved.
It's like a minor league. You and I talked about it. It's like a minor league baseball game. If you've ever been to a minor league baseball game, the Ironbirds, the Bay Sox, you know, even if it's not in Baltimore, the AFL in general, I mean, there's four teams in the league right now. You have the Albany Empire, you have the Philadelphia Soul, you have the Baltimore Brigade, and you have the Washington Valor. If you're in one of those markets, get to one of these games. These are entertaining games. The Brigade, they're not, they don't even have theirs on the radio yet. It's just on Monumental Sports Network. And it's still entertaining. One thing that I thought was really cool, and we talked about this, we've talked about this 100 times now, I feel like, if the ball comes in the stands,
yeah,
it's like a baseball game. You keep it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, well, I think one guy actually got ridiculed. I guess he didn't realize the rule, but, you know, the ball came to him, and he threw it back onto the field, and you could hear the fans like, no, what are you doing?
Keep
like,
that, you keep idiot. It.
Yeah, I mean, we got to put our hands on a football after the game and everything. It's a nice NFL-style type football. Just got the AFL logos on it and everything. So, I mean, it's a pretty cool souvenir for, you know, for kids, or like I said, if you're a memorabilia collector, it's kind of a cool thing to have.
Yeah, we're gonna definitely get one. You guys over the next few weeks are gonna see, if you're watching the video versions of this, you're gonna see some differences in their studio setup, and you're gonna see some of the memorabilia that we've got, and that's one of the things we're gonna try and get our hands on, is one of those AFL footballs and put it up there.
So the Brigade last year were 4-10. This year they're 7-3. Worst to first.
Yeah.
Is it possible, if, or what would it take? Let me ask you it this way. What would it take for the Orioles? And I can't even ask this without laughing. What would it take for the Orioles to go from worst to first next year? Is anything short of a miracle?
Theo Epstein.
It's going to be more than Theo Epstein.
It's horrendous right now. I mean, look, the Brigade, and not to transition too far to the Orioles, you know, but I want to go back to the Brigade for a second, because you mentioned that game that we went to was their first home loss.
Right.
You know, these guys really get out there and support them. I'm not going to say that enough. We're not paid to say this, just so you guys know. Right. We are not. Like, we went there as individuals. Like,
we're there as media. We're not there to represent them in any kind of way. We're there representing us.
Yeah, exactly. And the experience that we had, and we were just in the media booth. We were up where fans couldn't even get to.
Right.
We were up in the top rafters of this building, yeah, and we enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You will enjoy it if you're down in the center bowl, which is where all the seats are. So definitely go to that, especially since these guys are going to be playing playoffs and are in first place and can stay in first place and be looking at a championship this year.
Right.
Go see them. But what the Orioles are not doing is not getting a championship this year. So what does it take? It takes a hope, a prayer, and a miracle.
Yeah. I mean, you and I went to the game last night. Thank you for that. Yeah. Scott's father has season tickets, and we all ended up going to the game last night. And I think the most entertaining parts of the game...
ninth inning.
Going through the gate and grabbing the snow globe. The Buck Snowalter snow globe, for those out there that haven't seen it yet in social network world. Yeah, it's more of the same story. You know, it was basically the Orioles season in a nutshell, in one game.
But you can't say that. Chris Davis is back on track, Fred.
Yeah.
He's back on track.
Back on track. You know, 2 out of his last 15 since he's back in the lineup. I couldn't believe when I was hearing that.
Those are his words, by the way, for those of you that hadn't heard it. We don't have the audio because I couldn't find it. Chris Davis said, I'm back on track.
Back on track. You had two hits, one of which was a home run, one of which that almost was a grand slam. But let's not talk about the other 13 that were outs.
By the way, just so you guys know, that's a 130 average for 2 for 15. Yeah, you're actually worse.
Yeah, you're worse off than what your average is for the year. What would it take to get him back on track, man? I at this point, you know, I think they kind of did what we said. They sent him on a vacation, basically, and let him kind of go and get his mind clear for a little bit, and brought him back, and he just continues to struggle.
I'm gonna go extreme just because that's how I roll, and I have fun with this. What's gonna get him back on track? Quitting baseball. That's what's gonna get him back on track. You know who we bring back as our first baseman, and he's actually in a Texas league. I saw this this week.
Rafael Palmeiro.
Exactly. He is in. It was an E60 this past week. He is in Texas, and he is playing. League. He's playing in an independent league and playing down there. You know what? Come on, Rafi. What's the worst that can happen?
Hey, he's what, 51 years old, and at this point, I'd rather have a 51 year old Rafi out there than however the hell old Chris Davis
is. He's easier if he does worse. It's easier to let him go than it is Davis. I mean, what are you going to do? But it's going to take a reality check. We talked about this. I know you disagree on this because we've talked about it. I think the blame at this point, with where we are in the season, not just with Davis, but with this entire team, we had 6 guys in our lineup last night hitting under 225. 6.
Yeah.
6 out of 9 guys. And the 3 guys that are hitting over, guess what? You're probably looking at trading them sometime soon.
I better.
So at this point, I feel like you have to look at Scott Coolball. And maybe Buck at the same time. I think it's something with Coolball. And the reason I say that is because when Coolball came on last year, we saw more of that mentality of every hit's got to be home run. That's the way it seemed. They were trying to live up to that home run hitting team. And I think it's Coolball's message. I think it has something to do with that, because the guys that aren't listening right now, your Machado, your Jones, guess what they're doing? They're hitting base hits. They're not hitting the ball and trying to swing for the fences. And that's what we saw last night. Almost every guy is swinging for the fences. And guess what I'm throwing you as a pitcher? A low and away off-speed pitch. Because I'm going to get you almost every time.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. At some point, you got to be able to put the blame on somebody, somewhere. I just think that Scott Coolball is the easy scapegoat because he is the hitting coach for this team. And I'm not defending Scott Coolball in any kind of way. I feel like he is absolutely a part of this and a part of the problem. But I don't think getting rid of Scott Coolball and bringing somebody else in as a hitting coach is going to change this team like a light switch. I mean, it's just not this. I think there's deeper rooted problems with this team. I think there were so many contract situations and question marks going into this season that not everybody's minds were in the right places going into this year. And then, you know, they got off to such a horrible start that nobody expected. They didn't even expect it themselves. Nobody expected them to be this bad. No. And now I think it's just kind of one of those, well, at this point, the ship has sunk, and what pieces are going to be floating left when we go to rescue? You know what I mean? What pieces are going to be out there that stick with this team? You got Adam Jones hitting 290. You got Manny Machado hovering right around 300. Those two guys obviously are going to be your big trade chips. Zach Britton has been kind of up and down a little bit since he's returned. So you've got that trade chip there. But like we've talked about in the past, you know, at this point I'm fielding calls for whoever. Anybody that, you know, anybody feels is going to be a value to them that they're willing to send us prospects for, I'm listening.
To that point, what do they have to do, not just to the team to turn around the team, but what are you going to do to get fans in the stands? They said 20,000, 21,000 last night. I said it before, that's what they were going to say.
Right.
You, myself, my dad, looked in the stadium, we said, what, 14?
I would say 14 to maybe 16,000 at most were there last night. And that was for Buck Snowalter Snow Globe night. You know what I mean? I mean, typically your bigger giveaway nights, you know, your statue nights like in years past, your bobbleheads and stuff like that, they damn near sell out. They had 25,000 of these things to give out to anybody 15 and older.
And there's at least 4,000.
We got there like right before the game started, and there were tons of boxes still left of these things to give out. So there's no way that there were over 20,000 people there last night. It's sad, man. And there's a lot of things that need to happen to get the fans back out there. It's not like overnight, you know, because this has always been a very good sports town, especially when it comes for, you know, baseball and football. There's still a ton of Oriole fans out there. But who wants to go and watch this awful product night in and night out?
You know, we talked about it before. It's the old school fans versus the new school. The old school are still going to the games. You know, I have some friends. I have some people that I know, people that I work with that, why'd you go to the game?
Yeah.
Well, because we have tickets. Why'd you go to the game last week? because they were free.
But that's the difference. And you know, there's only so many out there that are diehard true fans, that are the season ticket holders, that kind of thing. You know, the stands are usually filled with those. And then you've got the, you know, the bandwagoners when the team is doing good, that kind of thing. And then you get the crowd fill-ins with like the student nights and things like that that help fill in. Right now, I mean, it's just, even with the amazing promotion, I still think it's a great promotion that they're running with the kids get in free under 9 years old for an Upper Deck ticket. I still think that that's great. But that really hasn't shown any kind of improvement in the fan base at all.
The most people in the Upper Deck last night were the fans that they brought in for the Zach's guys or whatever it was.
Right, right.
You know, the player-sponsored group. That was the largest group in the Upper Deck last night that I saw. We can't see up in the Upper Deck behind us in left field, but I highly doubt there was any group bigger than that.
Speaking of Zach, James brings up a point. He says, Boston's looking for Britton as a setup man for their closer. I wouldn't be opposed to that. To me, the whole dealing people in the AL East thing and the fear of giving somebody to Boston or the fear of giving somebody to the Yankees, those players are going to have that opportunity when they hit free agency anyway. If they want to go to the Yankees and the Yankees are the highest bidder, that's where they're going to go. If the Red Sox are the highest bidder, that's where they're going to go. They don't have any allegiance to the Orioles and say, oh, no, sorry, I played for the Orioles at one point. I can't play for the Red Sox or the Yankees. Hell no. If these guys are paying them the most amount of money, they're going to go there. So if you have an opportunity, right, exactly. And if you've got an opportunity to trade within your division and it's going to give you the biggest return in prospects, I'm all ears for it. I'm all for it. Because at some point, that's going to end up coming back to bite Boston, especially if we get the value in those prospects that we covet. Like I said, if you have similar offers from a division rival versus, you know, somebody who's not in your division and you're kind of 1A and 1B in it, yeah, don't trade within the division. It makes sense to go outside of your division. But if they're far and away giving you the better package, I take that.
Yeah, you have to. You have to, because like you said, it's gonna, while it may not hurt, while it may help them right now, you don't know what it's gonna do in the future. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is part of a reason I am back and forth on this whole idea. Eduardo Rodriguez. Anybody know that name?
Oh yeah.
Pitcher for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Guess where he came from?
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles.
Right.
We gave him to them. That came to bite us in the butt because he pitches really well against us.
Yes, and no.
He's doing well.
I mean, you got to think of where those terms were, why we made that trade. We got probably one of the best closers in the game, or one of the best setup closers in the game at that time, in Andrew Miller. And we were going for a playoff run. We were going for a division run at that point. And at that time, that's what Boston wanted.
Yeah.
Eduardo was still kind of in the AA ranks. We weren't really 100% sure on what we had in him. He still had some developmental stuff going on. I was okay with that
trade. But that's a prime example of where it is dangerous. You know, Eduardo, you know, he's not a Chris Hale. He's not a Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
But he is, if he's on the Orioles, I guarantee you he's probably the number one or number two guy right now.
Right.
Period.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
But I, to your point, being on the reverse side of that now, where we'd be giving up the Zach Britton like the Andrew Miller and getting an Eduardo Rodriguez in return,
right?
I'm all for it.
Yeah,
because like you said, it's going to end up biting Boston in the butt on the end of that. One of the things that you're talking about, like getting people back in the stands, not to be too nostalgic or anything, but like when we were at the game last night, I was kind of looking around before the game started and whatnot, and even in between innings and stuff. I can remember being a kid, and before the games would start, players would be out in the field throwing the balls around, and after they were done playing catch, they'd walk over to the stands, and you know, you'd throw your ball down to them, and they'd give you their autographs and that kind of stuff. Things like that go a long way for kids. You know, kids are very impressionable, and those types of things are things that they'll remember for a lifetime. I still, to this day, can remember multiple times getting autographs
yeah.
as a kid I can tell you who the players were. I can tell you where we were. You know, I'm 37 years, almost 37 years old now. I can remember all that stuff. Like those are things. Those are things that I remember, and you just don't see that nowadays. I mean, I know that a lot of these players, you know, they're coached not to do this type of thing because they can make money on it going to these places. But really, these guys make so much money on their contracts, endorsements, and things of that nature. If you want to get people back into the stands, as a club, as an owner, I'm encouraging my players to be more interactive with the fans. Spend a little time. You don't have to go out there and spend 2 hours and sign every autograph that comes up to you.
You don't need to be Cal.
No, but go out there and spend a little bit of time, create some impressions, create some memories for kids. And you know, if you really want to catch the next generation of fans, those are the types of things that are going to do it.
Well, and that's why I love the players that, like, especially during batting practice, that get out there. I'm sure you've seen the videos. The players that are playing catch with a kid,
right,
on the side. Like, I've actually been at an Orioles game and seen that, and I thought it was the coolest thing. You know, it was only like 2 or 3 years ago, but I'm sitting there, you know, as a 27-year-old going, that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Like, I remember some of the stuff the player, you know, I remember getting the ball thrown to me from a player and, you know, things like that, or catching a ball here, catching a ball there. But to play catch with a player, I think it's great. I think they definitely, you know, the players that do that are above and beyond. I didn't bring this up to you last night, but Trey Mancini surprised me last night. I have never seen Trey Mancini throw a baseball into the stands ever.
Really?
I've seen kids, Trey, like, can I have a ball, please? Politest kid in the world. He acts like he doesn't hear him.
Wow.
And it's dead. I'm talking a night where Caleb Joseph behind the plate can hear this kid yelling Trey.
Oh, wow. That's surprising. He comes off to me as not a guy that would be that way.
And I thought the same thing, but time after time after time after time, I've watched him make eye contact with people, not even blink. Last night was the first time that I've ever seen him throw a ball into the stands. And that used to be a regular thing. You brought it up. Yeah. It didn't used to be, you know, the ninth inning. You know, it kind of has developed to that where guys will throw it up in the ninth. You know, they'll throw it up and when they're done playing catch. But it used to be almost every inning,
right?
Somebody's throwing up a ball. You know, that's just what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, I still remember. I remember my first autograph.
Yeah. Who was it? Where were you, and who was it?
I was in left field.
Okay.
Where our seats are. I actually moved over a section to the bullpen. My first signature ever. That I remember, my dad could probably tell you I've gotten, you got like 5 before you were 3 or something like that. But the first one that I remember, a guy that used to chew bubblegum and hand the bubblegum out to kids, like he'd bring a bucket over and just throw them at kids. Elrod Hendricks,
good old Elrod.
Always a fan of Elrod.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately he passed and, you know, is no longer with us, but I thought he was great. You know, he's... And that's what I like and what I'm hearing. I actually heard a thing about it today about Millsy. Millsy came up with Elrod, you know, in the Orioles organization as far as, you know, Elrod was his bullpen coach. Mm-hmm. And his mentor, yeah. And, you know, to see a guy like that back in the bullpen, see these guys seem to be a little bit more relaxed.
Right.
You know, they were talking about with Tanner Scott, you know, he's willing. He doesn't have to seek out Millsy. Millsy will go, hey, why don't you try this? Like, he's not aggressive in the way that, oh, no, you need to do it this way. You know, he kind of lets the guys pitch. These guys got to the major league level pitching the way that they do.
Right.
You know, you can't go changing things. It's kind of refreshing to hear that statement, especially out of Tanner Scott you know, from last night. That interview was with Jim Hunter today, you know, pregame for the Orioles. But I think it's great, you know, guys like that, you know, not just on the field, but off the field, just to kind of have that mentality and have you know, the wherewithal and just share it with everybody. You know, you're a Major League Baseball player, man. Right. It takes me back to Little Big League, where he just says, "You guys are Major League Baseball players.
Right?
You get to play baseball for a living.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes you back to stuff like that, and it's that nostalgic side of things. I mean, who was your first autograph?
Well,
do you remember?
My first autograph that I remember, it was actually at Memorial Stadium, and it was right before the team moved to Camden Yards. It was the last season that they were there, and I stayed after one of the games was over, and I was sitting probably about 10 rows behind the Orioles dugout in that game, and I went down to the dugout, and all the players, and I'm talking the top players. I mean, I have a baseball. I still have it. It's at my mom's house. So I don't have it here with me. But Brady Anderson, Cal Ripken, Billy Ripken, Cheeto Martinez. Who else? I mean, I had like six or seven autographs, you know, just in this one setting. You know, and these guys, and I'm telling you, there were a ton of us. Because this is when, even though that year, the Orioles didn't do very well, everybody was there because everybody was trying to take in the last, you know, couple of games at Memorial Stadium, that kind of thing. Because, I mean, that stadium has so many years memories. And memories and whatnot.
Sucks that they tore that down.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, that's the autographs that I remember. And I've had multiple ones after that and things of that nature. But
you know what you're making me do?
There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Oh, no, but...
nostalgia brings it back, man.
Yeah, man. It's they got to do something because look, they suck. At the end of the day, the product is awful. The product is bad, and they got to do something to get the fans back in the stands. And you know, it's not gonna. There's no fix for this overnight. They're not going to wake up tomorrow and end up going on a, you know, 30 or 40 game winning streak. So for those people out there holding on hope for that, you might as well let that one go. So, you know, they got to do things to try to outside of the box, get people back in the stands. And one of the things last night that I kind of like to see was there was a little bit of fire. There was a little bit of passion behind the team. Obviously, Darren O'Day had some history with the home plate umpire last night. Darren O'Day in his entire major league career,
576 game last night, by the way,
right, had only had one balk called against him in his entire career. While that same umpire was calling the game last night, called him for another balk. Here's O'Day's comments after the game. He wasn't too happy.
You know, I was just trying to get Nelson out. Playing with Nelson, I know how good he is and how hard it is to get him out. So I'm just out there grinding to get him out. And it looked like I got him there. And I'm just walking back to the mound. And I heard Nelson talk to Haneder. And I was like, what could he be talking about? And then I was looking around and then... Stu told me I didn't stop, and after that I don't remember what he said. I lost it because, like you said, I have two blocks and this is my 11th season, and they're both in the last year when he's behind the plate focusing on balls and strikes, and he's balked me twice for an inside move that hasn't been a balk any other time in 10 years. And to be fair, I've been warned to stop before. That's usually how most umpires handle it. They say, hey, O'Day, make sure you come to a stop. Sure, no problem. So I respect the hell out of umpires. They have a hard job. They really do. But I don't know what's going on. I still don't even know for sure who called it because nobody held their hands up or called time or yelled balk or anything. A fan could have yelled balk. I don't know. Or the other team. I don't really know because nobody explained it to me. But the most unfortunate part about it is that after I lost it and got ejected, Zach had to come in and pitch. And then they rushed him warming up, which is just ludicrous because he was probably sitting down there chewing gum, not even thinking he was going to pitch. So now you got to use a guy. We got a thin bullpen. Now you got to use a guy. And now, you know, that hurts us tomorrow. I'd love to hear an explanation. I don't know what it could possibly be. I've seen the video. Pretty clear stop. It's the same thing I've been doing for many years now, and just over a calendar year I've gotten blocked by the same guy in tight situations, and that's kind of why I have to apologize to my mom tonight for all those swear words I said.
And those swear words is exactly what I'm talking about. That passion, man. To see O'Day lose his marbles a little bit, for me, I mean, you know, when this team is struggling as bad as they are, I liked it. And then to see Buck come out on the field.
Yeah, well, I mean, you brought it up. I mean, the fire and passion. You know what's ironic was when we were there last night, the players, they do every once in a while, I'm sure you've all seen the videos at the game, is they do like a player interview question, like who's the most this, who's the most that. Well, the question was who's the smartest? And everybody was saying Darren O'Day. And Darren's like, I don't know. I forget who he said. And then they go back to asking more people. And they're all, Darren O'Day. It's got to be O'Day. O'Day. And he comes back on and goes, who's the most humble guy on the team?
I mean, I will say this. In defense of the umpire, to a degree, if you ever watch Darren O'Day pitch, he does have a little bit of a herky-jerky kind of set. He doesn't. He's always kind of rocking. He's never really completely stopped on that mound moving. But he's gone. How many? 576. 576 innings. 576 games, and only had one, now two balks called against him, and those two balks are the same umpire.
Both times when he was behind the that umpire's behind the plate, and Darren said it. Behind the plate, your job as an umpire is balls and strikes and plays at the plate.
Right.
Those balk calls are usually up to your outer umpires.
Yeah, and it was good to see Buck come out there and kind of push Darren to the side. And
oh, he wasn't pushing. He was having a shot. Yeah. Buck was in there. Go look at a video. Buck was in there like a linebacker, like an offensive lineman, just pushing.
Yeah, it was good to see that. And then Buck on Buck Snowalter night. Getting into the face. I think somebody on Twitter said it perfectly. It was like, I hope Buck gets in his face, yells at him as much as he can, and then right before he walks off the field, wishes him a merry effing Christmas as he walks off the field. Yeah. It was good to see Buck, and Buck hears his comments with the O'Day situation after the game.
It's just over, umpiring. Some inventing an argument. Doesn't have to be. Same thing happened in New York. Same way, you know, he messed up the check swing on Gordon, too. And you got third base umpire looking at it, second base umpire looking at first base umpire, can't see that, and it's seeing something. Basically just kind of creating an argument that shouldn't be there. It's unfortunate. Hopefully the league will get it corrected.
Bucca, Darren's not a guy who gets too angry on the mound, especially.
Well,
like
he's had two balks in his whole career, I think, and probably come back, and I was talking to him. Both been by the same guy that, you know, it probably upset you too.
Exactly. I mean, he hit it right on the head to our point. Yeah, obviously this guy has some sort of thing for O'Day.
You know, the other thing to kind of get technical here for a second, the rule book states nothing about coming to a complete stop if you actually read the rule book. It is a repetitive, you have to have the same motion every time, and you cannot, a balk is defined as a motion in the order to deceive a hitter.
Right, and that's to my point, what I was saying earlier, and I didn't get to finish it, is that Darren O'Day may have a rocky set position, if you want to call it that, but it's consistent.
Exactly.
It's always the same. It's never any different, but it's definitely not a complete stop.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. It's never been a complete stop to him, but you know, just like he said, it's never been a problem with anybody else.
No, that's him.
And this umpire has had multiple problems, not just with the Orioles, not just with Darren O'Day, but multiple problems. And we talked about it last night. And this could open up a huge can of worms discussion. You know, that we may need to put on Twitter and Facebook here. And if you're on YouTube and you're watching on YouTube, please comment, you know, with what your thoughts are. But at some point, at what point, let me ask that, at what point do you hold these umpires accountable and how?
Whew, that's a loaded question. I think that absolutely the umpires, I think NFL refs, NBA refs, like it doesn't stop with just Major League Baseball. I think they all need to be held more accountable. I think their salaries and fines need to be in place to affect their pay, you know, performance for pay, you know, pay for performance type thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that could happen to clean that up a little bit. Look, they're human. They're going to make mistakes. There's things of that, but their technology is to a point right now that can really get around any mistake, and you can correct a mistake that's made. So I, you know, with baseball, it's kind of a fine line as to how do you correct a situation like this? Because, well, do you open the door to challenging anything when you're trying to make already a slow paced game, trying to speed it up? And that, what's that going to do? That's going to tend to slow it down more. So that's why I say it's kind of it's a double-edged sword on how you go about it. But I do think that they need to be held accountable more, and there needs to be more performance-based fines.
Yeah, I mean, even if you call it, you know, whether you look at it as like a first offense, a second offense, you know, something like that, or you know, maybe you look at it like, you know, kind of like the criminal justice system. Is it first degree? Is it a first degree offense? A second degree offense? Was it egregious? If it's egregious, it comes with fine and potentially suspension.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to bring up the point because I know that he was extremely upset about it. But Andrés Galarraga, everybody probably remembers Andrés Galarraga with Detroit had a complete game no hitter going. Yeah. And on the last play, guy, like, no ifs, ands, or buts. Everybody real time saw the guy was out, and the umpire calls him safe.
Yeah.
And that was before challenges. So, you know, that something like that is what triggered, you know, the challenge rules and things like that to kind of speed up. But at the same time, he was never actually held accountable. He was never fined. Yes, I thought it was great when he came back. He handed him the ball. He apologized. I think that was a great show by MLB, a great show by this umpire. Right. And it gave me, while it was the wrong call for that umpire, it gave me respect for the umpire because the umpire owned his mistake.
Absolutely.
And that's what it comes down to. You know, you have to own your mistake and you have to be sincere about it. I mean, the guy, when he hands the ball to him, like, he was in tears.
Yeah.
Because he knew he royally screwed up. I think it's, you know, like I said, we can get into a whole conversation about this. This is a whole different conversation for a different day. But I agree. There's definitely got to be, you know, some accountability. You know, Buck was also really pissed off about the latter half of what happened, not just the balk call. But here's what Buck's quick comments were regarding when Britton came in.
Three and what probably bothers me the most is the guy out there rushing Zach to get ready. And I will talk to league office about that. That's totally unacceptable and unprofessional.
I mean, when's the last time you heard Buck say, I'm talking to the league office? I mean, we sat there and we watched the game. We're in left field and we watched Buck stand there.
Oh yeah.
He stand there
until play was called again, to continue play ball. And then he finally went down in the tunnel. I thought, man, they're going to have to pull this guy off the field. Like, he's not going anywhere, but he did eventually go down into the tunnel. Yeah. I mean, I've yet to see, that's what I'm saying. Like, it look, there's very few silver linings surrounding this team right now. So the things that I'm trying to hold on to are very subtle, and I'm trying to be somewhat positive here. And it was good to see a little bit of passion and some people getting fired up and pissed off about things maybe not going their way. Because otherwise, I mean, this team is just a dead doornail. I mean, they're boring to watch. You know, you don't get excited about them anymore. It's hard.
You said you had another silver lining and you didn't tell me what it was.
So yeah, the only other silver lining, we'll say, and I was listening to an interview with Jim Duquette the other day on the radio, and he was down watching some of the top high school talent. And I guess if there's any silver lining of being the worst team in Major League Baseball, as chances are, you're going to end up with the number one draft pick going into next year. And Duquette was really, really high on a guy, Bobby Witt Jr., down there, who's a shortstop currently, but has a lot of the similar tools that a Manny Machado has. Maybe not the height. I think the guy, he told me he's like 6'1", but his range is really good. His bat is almost ready now. So if the Orioles don't screw that up with the first round pick, I mean, that's your one silver lining off of having a terrible season.
I got a great idea. Let's get him at first round. Let's get him all the way through the minor league system. And then right before he's ready to come up, let's move him to third base.
Yeah.
Have him be the most, you know, the most successful third baseman potentially, you know, of all time. And let's move him back to shortstop, you know, just to see if we can't sign him before then.
Where have I heard that story before? Sounds awfully familiar.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, hey, you know, it's good. It is good in that fact. The one thing that just always scares me is our farm system. You know, as we've talked about, there are some good guys coming out of there. You know, we've seen some good guys in the past, but we do have a tendency to kind of struggle with them. Right. So we'll kind of, you know, see what happens, you know, from there. But Fred, I think it's about that time.
And now it's time for the 2 minute warning.
All right, Fred, we are getting awfully close to the end of the show, and so It is time for our 2 minute warning. And your time, if I can get my timer up, might help, wouldn't it? Your time is going to start now.
All right, Mets GM Sandy Alderson. Unfortunately, he's going to have to take a leave of absence. He's battling cancer. He is now 70 years old. Magic Johnson came out and said that if the Lakers are to miss out on free agents over the next 2 summers, then he's going to step down as GM of the Lakers. We'll see how that works out. In somewhat breaking news right before the show, Wizards trade center Marcin Gortat to the Clippers in exchange for guard Austin Rivers. Salary dump?
Salary.
Maybe a salary dump there. Argentina's Marcus Rojo scores a late goal in the 86th minute to avoid complete humiliation in this year's World Cup. They now face France in round 2. James Harden wins the NBA MVP award and is now the 4th ever Houston Rocket to have won such an honor. Guy just can't seem to get it done in the playoffs, but we'll see. Tampa Bay Lightning re-signed forward JT Miller to a 5-year, $26 million contract. That was a guy, if the Capitals were going to bring in anybody from the outside, I would like to have seen them go after him. Tiger Woods, he's going to experiment with a new putter this weekend at the Quicken Loans National. Really trying to clean up his short game, and at this point, I think he's pulling at straws to improve his game. German Olympic champion cyclist Christina Vogel, she had to be airlifted to the hospital in Berlin after a very serious crash in training and is currently in serious condition. John Daly in the news, and he's pissed. He is withdrawn from the U.S. Senior Open after he was denied being able to use a cart for tourney play. PGA says he didn't provide sufficient information on this one, but something right up John Daly's alley, that guy.
Here's my statement on this, though. It's the freaking Senior Open. Yeah. Give them all carts, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Shut the hell up that he didn't have sufficient proof on the Senior Open.
Yeah, that, you would think for the Senior Open that might be a rule that they change.
Let's flex a little for the senior. That, you know, no, we're not going to give Jack Nicklaus a cart. You kidding me? He doesn't get a cart. He doesn't need one.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Well, that's about it, man. That's another episode in the books.
51 in the books.
51. We thank you guys all for tuning in just as usual every week. Be sure to check us out on the web at www.birdlandbs.com. Follow us on all our social network sites, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find the audio podcast now on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, TuneIn, and now it's official. We are on Spotify. So be sure to go on to Spotify, look us up, and follow us there. Thanks for tuning in. As always, for Birdland BS, I'm Fred.
I'm Scott.
We'll see you guys.
See ya!